Alex and I, we got to know each other over the last several years. I'm very familiar with him. He is a brilliant young journalist. And I mean young. I am old enough to be his dad. He is 33 years of age, and he is brilliant, particularly specializing in the areas of education and also globalism, global government, the deep state. If anybody didn't believe in the deep state prior to 2016, hopefully you're convinced that it exists now. It's not just in one party, although it has completely taken over the Democratic Party. But there are so-called Republicans that are also a part of this. They want to see everything continue to revolve around the control power center inside the Beltway. In fact, quite frankly, within the realms of the United Nations. But Alex and I have met on the speaking tour and become fast friends. We're part of several organizations together, and he and Dan and I have known each other, worked together for years, of course, Charlie as well. But I'm going to introduce Alex in just a moment, but I did a message just after we had reconvened back on May the 3rd. It was called Connecting the Dots. When you're on our website watching the other sermons, I encourage you to go back and watch that. And I took it beginning in Daniel chapter 2, where it talks about the last days, a brief period of time when the Antichrist comes to power. He is propped up by this last global confederation. It's been called the revived Roman Empire. It's been called these 10 sectors of the world, or these 10 nations have come together. Quite frankly, you look in the Hebrew, the word is for, it says king and not kingdom. It's the Hebrew word melech. It's king. So I've often thought in my mind, of course, this is just a theory, that it is 10 significant, I don't know, could have been super banks, maybe super internet powers like YouTube or whatever. I can't even think of them. I'm so old. But, you know, that kind of group coming together. Or it could be 10, which is I personally lean towards the 10 men like a George Soros's, coming together, putting forward another little king, says, that eventually becomes their Rav, their leader or their lord. Three of them rebel, say, we don't like this guy, he's getting too powerful. They get taken out, and this guy really comes to power over the last 3.5 years of that 7-year period of time. My conjecture is that everything that we have seen beginning in February is because of, up until 2016, everything was going along grandly. And America was quickly letting down our sovereignty and integrating into no longer being the dominant world power, but just being a part of the United Nations. And of course, our last president went on a speaking tour apologizing to the world for America being America. Boy, we've got a lot to apologize. Aren't we sorry that France isn't still run by Nazi Germany? If it wasn't for the United States of America, the world would look significantly different than it does. But we were quickly eroding as a power and an influence. We were being integrated into the global government. And quite frankly, the stage was set for the next socialist. By the way, that's not name calling. That is a fact. Hillary Clinton was ready to take over. And let me tell you, folks, if that had happened, we would have gone over the falls. After 8 years of President Obama, 8 years of Hillary Clinton, there would have been no recovery. All of a sudden, somebody that probably most of us didn't even like. I never even watched the show The Apprentice. I wasn't a Trump fan at all, and wasn't in 2016. I was a supporter of Ted Cruz. But all of a sudden, somehow, some way, the voice, yeah, thank you, God, for giving us a reprieve. The voice of America was smart enough to stand up and say, we don't want to be ruled over anymore. We want somebody that's going to be not president of the world, but president of the United States. And all of a sudden, Mr. Make America Great Again became president. We've renegotiated trade deals. We've taken care of border security. We've recognized that China is a evil communist world power. And they are not out for our best interest. And in February of this year, his reelection was assured. There was no doubt. Unemployment, all-time lows, in every category. Our economy had never been stronger. Then all of a sudden, we have things back to back. We have this global Pandemic. Plandemic, exactly. Plandemic. Oh, I'm sure Alex will address that. We'll not talk about that. It's not my show tonight. And then next thing you know, we have rioting in the streets. Spontaneous rioting everywhere. And amazingly, pallets of bricks just show up at the right location at the right time. It's just an amazing coincidence that all this thing has come together. Right after the failed impeachment, everything else is exactly right. So I told Alex, you know, I laid this, and I asked him to cover this material directly tonight because I think this will complete what I began back in May with the connecting the dots. I think we're going to see a lot of connecting of the dots. Alex is going to speak for about 40, 45 minutes. If we have time, we're going to take some questions from the audience. Then we are going to be dismissed promptly at 8 o'clock because we're going to be done with your kids at 8 and we ain't keeping them. So with that, please give a warm welcome to our special guest, Alex Newman.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. It's such an honor to speak in Paul's church. I don't know if you guys know, but he's got quite a national following. And you guys are really blessed to have this church here. And as luck would have it, we are very blessed in Florida because close to where I live, Paul came down and planted a church. So that's very nice. And there's a wonderful pastor who's taken over there, Dexter Sanders. And so we get to be blessed in Florida as well. Now, I have a serious subject to speak to you about tonight. And I think a lot of you will already know a lot of this, which is good, because some of this stuff, for people who've never heard any of it, it's a little bit scary. I don't think it should be. The Lord has not given us a spirit of fear, but it is intense. So we'll talk about the deep state, and we'll start at the superficial level. 75% of Americans now recognize that we have a deep state. That's according to the latest polling. Just a fringe little minority doesn't recognize that we have a deep state. The problem is they don't define the deep state properly. In the polling, they defined it as a group of unelected government and military officials who secretly manipulate or direct national policy. Now, that's a good start, but it only scratches the surface. It's just the tippy top of the iceberg, so to speak. So this information is now getting up into the highest levels of our government. Rich Higgins, he was the director of policy and planning at the National Security Council. He wrote a memo that President Donald Trump read and enjoyed. He was actually fired by H.R. McMaster for this memo. We'll come to him later. But in the memo, he defined the deep state very, very well, I think. He said the deep state is a successful outcome of cultural Marxism, bureaucratic state beholden to no one, no rule of law considerations outside those that further deep state power, and the deep state truly becomes then God bestriding the earth, as Hegel advocated. So this is a really nice, concise definition from the highest levels of the federal policymaking apparatus, the national security apparatus. And they also said in this memo, globalists and Islamists, and there's others in this coalition as well, both recognize that for their visions to succeed, America must be crushed as an ideal and as a national and political identity. That's their objective, or one of their objectives, is to crush the United States. They can't have their little new world order with all their ideas unless and until they get rid of the United States. That's why we are now target number one. We'll start with the bureaucratic deep state, and this really has kind of come out of the closet during the Trump administration. We've got 3 million federal employees. Obviously, not all of them are part of the deep state, but plenty of the senior officials are. This doesn't include the 2 million we've got in the military, and it doesn't include the 20 million we have at the state and local level. But 3 million, that's a lot of people for one president to manage. And their political leanings are pretty clear at this point. This chart comes from The Hill. It's an online journal, very well respected. And they looked at the election spending data in the 2016 election. The blue is the money that went to Hillary Clinton from federal employees. The red is what went to Donald Trump. And you look at the specific bureaucracies here, the most conservative of all of them was Veterans Affairs, and that was 88% for Hillary Clinton. But you go up to Department of Education, as an example, 99.7% of their contributions went to Hillary Clinton. These are the people educating your children. You look at the Department of Justice, right? Unbelievable. You got 97% of their money went to Hillary Clinton. Department of State. What is it? 99% went to Hillary Clinton. So you get a sense of this monstrous bureaucracy and why Trump is having so much problems in Washington, D.C. Now, the FBI put out a report early on in the administration. They found out that there was these conspirators working in the federal government, working with people outside of the government to stifle the president, to interrupt, to block his policies, to sabotage his administration. And they had evidence. They started investigating, and a lot of it goes back to the senior executive service. If you've ever been in the federal government, you might have heard of that. If you haven't, you probably don't know of this. But this is the upper level of the bureaucracy. Now, about 70% of the people who are in the senior executive service were appointed during the Obama administration. Some of them were appointed before. And so many of them are really the essence of deep state swamp creatures, at least within the federal bureaucracy. I like to put faces to these things. There's one of them. You might recognize Lois Lerner, the one who was terrorizing conservatives and Tea Party groups and Christians using the IRS as a weapon. So she's part of the senior executive service. These people are almost impossible to get rid of. She's still walking around free, even after weaponizing the IRS to terrorize conservatives. And there are many, many more like her. Trump has a very hard time getting rid of them. They can even commit crimes and you can't get rid of them. So Trump has had a very difficult time trying to get the bureaucracy to do what he wants. That's one of the reasons why the deep state has been able to sabotage so many of his policies. Now, they also have a lot of tools at their disposal. Nobody actually knows how many federal regulations there are with criminal penalties attached that could send you to prison. The estimates are about 500,000. Some of these are so ridiculous you wouldn't believe it. I'm sure you have violated many of them without knowing. And a member of Congress actually asked, how many of these are there? They asked the Congressional Research Service, can you figure out for us, please, how many regulations could you go to prison for? And mind you, these are not things written by Congress. These are things written by deep state federal bureaucrats. They said, oh, sorry, we don't have the resources or the manpower to figure that out. Now, why is this significant? Because everybody in America is potentially a criminal. Harvey Silvergate, he's a very liberal attorney, he wrote this book called Three Felonies a Day. So the average American probably commits around 3 federal felonies a day violating these regulations. Now, most of us are probably not going to go to prison over those violations, thank goodness. But if we helped somebody get elected who promised they were going to drain the swamp, well, that might be a different matter, right? I don't know if you guys read the Drudge Report. I don't recommend it. But just a few days ago, they had a big article up there about how they're getting ready to throw President Trump in prison once he leaves office. They're going to march him out of there, they think, with an orange jumpsuit and put him into prison. How are they going to do that? They've got maybe 500,000, maybe more, regulations with criminal penalties attached. That's how they took out Roger Stone. That's how they took out Paul Manafort. That's how they took out General Mike Flynn, who was Trump's first national security advisor. They were targeting all the people around him who were giving him good advice, who helped him get elected, who defied the political establishment in the United States, or the deep state. Now, the intelligence community, so-called, is another key component of the deep state. It is not what I call the deep state behind the deep state, but you can't talk about the deep state without mentioning the intelligence community. And they've become very, very open about what they're doing. This was a tweet. I don't know if you guys remember when Trump started talking about the CIA and he was mad about all the leaks and said these people are out of control. They just completely ripped off the mask. This guy here used to be in the intelligence community. He posted on Twitter that he had just gotten an email from his friend, senior source in the intelligence community, and that it began, Trump will die in jail. Okay? Can you imagine saying that in public? It's your former boss. Now, in Washington, D.C., this is all very, very well known. They don't talk about it much in what we call flyover country. That's you guys. But in Washington, D.C., everybody knows about this, and they do talk about it openly occasionally. This is this guy, Rachel Maddow, interviewing Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader at this point. Listen to what he says.
To the intelligence community.
You take on the intelligence community, they have 6 ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
They're talking about our president. He's been really dumb to take them on. They got 6 ways from Sunday to get back at him. Now, here's the former head of the Central Intelligence Agency thanking his fake god because the deep state is going after the president. Listen to this.
Concern, and often used term about a deep state being
well,
there to take him
out.
Thank
God for the deep state.
Thank God for the deep state. That's John McLaughlin. He used to run the CIA. So the CNN will say, oh, that's fake news. There's no deep state. There's nobody trying to get Trump. He's just a dummy. Well, the former head of the CIA thanks his little god for the deep state trying to take out Trump. Now, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to the news. Most of it's fake anyway. But right now, they are in the process of organizing a coup d'etat. They have every intention of removing the president. They're talking openly now. Joe Biden has talked about it, escorting Trump out of the White House using the military. Now, they've set up a front group called the
Transition Integrity Project. Naturally, it's funded by George Soros. We'll come back to him. It's got people like John Podesta. And it's a bipartisan group because they've got Bill Kristol, right? The never Trump neocon who used to run that bankrupt magazine, Weekly Standard or something. So it's bipartisan because there's fake Republican rhinos on there. And they came up with these four scenarios that supposedly might happen at the election. In no scenario did Trump just win re-election and gets to be the president. In most of the scenarios, violence breaks out in the street. In some of the scenarios, the military has to step in. And in the fourth and final one, it's the only one where Trump actually wins the election. Not the popular vote, but the election. And they say, oh, well, that will give us the leverage to abolish the Electoral College, to turn Washington, D.C. into a state, to turn Puerto Rico into a state, basically pack the U.S. Senate with Democrats. We would have one-party rule. They could pack the Supreme Court. So they say, well, maybe we'll think about letting you be president if you give us all these concessions. Now, we have senior people in the military. This is a total violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Senior former military people writing open letters talking about how the military is going to have to remove Trump from the White House. There were two lieutenant colonels retired who wrote an open letter in a military publication calling on the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, to be ready to give the order to have the military go into the White House and escort Trump out of there after the election. And they're already setting the stage for this in the fake media. They're telling us, oh, you know, it's going to look like a landslide for Trump on Election Day, but don't worry, we've got those mail-in ballots. We'll count those until we have enough ballots for Joe Biden to win. Hillary Clinton said, under no circumstances do you concede this election, because they're going to keep finding mail-in ballots until they can make Biden their president. If Trump complains about the vote fraud, that's evidence that he's a dictator and that we need to send the military in to remove him. If Trump tries to crack down on our cities burning and the terrorism and the looting and the rioting, more evidence that he's a dictator. We got to send in the military to remove him. This is what they're planning right now. They've done this multiple times over the last few decades in Eastern Europe. They did it in parts of the Middle East during the Arab Spring. And the very same people who organized these revolutions, they call them color revolutions, or they got to pick a random color, pick an Eastern European country. CIA was almost certainly behind it. They are planning for this now in the United States, and it's literally the same people. The exact same people. Okay, the people who wrote the manual, the people who ran these operations in Ukraine, the people who ran these operations in Egypt, they are not messing around. Now, this intelligence community, we've got 16 agencies, and I always put in the caveat. I know some of the guys who work here. Some of them are wonderful, God-fearing, patriotic, Constitution-obeying Americans. Unfortunately, at the leadership level, it is rotten to the core. Now, the Washington Compost, back before it was purchased by Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Amazon, they occasionally publish decent stuff, and they did a huge investigation into the national security state. They found that there was more than 1,250 government bureaucracies involved in this intelligence community, more than 2,000 outside companies, more than 10,000 different locations spread across the United States and around the world, with more than 1 million people having top secret security clearance. You know, I'm all about keeping America safe. It's important. But I'm pretty sure we don't need a million people with top secret security clearance to do that. And as we go through this, you'll see that many of them are not actually keeping America safe. They are helping America's enemies, and they are working to bring down this country. Silicon Valley was, in many cases, actually built up by the deep state and the military-industrial complex. Google, for example, not a lot of people realize, back when it was still in that garage with those two gentlemen, was getting funding from DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Facebook was funded in part by people connected with InQtel, the investment arm of the intelligence community. So these aren't just intelligence tools. I mean, they're gathering all your data and they're giving it to whoever they feel like it. They're also manipulating you. They're used in psychological operations. They're used to map out connections. And so the intelligence community completely dominates the so-called big technology companies. That's why they're censoring the internet. That's why they won't let you speak out. That's why they put you in Facebook jail, literally for putting up like Bible verses. I have a friend who was put in Facebook jail for 30 days for putting nothing but a Bible verse on Facebook. Apparently, you're not allowed to criticize certain things that God calls an abomination, even by quoting God's word, without ending up in Facebook jail. So they say that we need all this apparatus to keep us safe. We don't even know what their budget is, because a lot of it's off the record. It's black budget, they call it, because top secret, can't tell the people paying for this what's going on. But supposedly they're keeping us safe from terrorists, extremists, and all the rest of it. Well, during the Obama administration, we got a really interesting window into what was actually going on here. They identified 72 different categories of so-called terrorists, extremists, people that needed to be watched. And if you have an opinion and a pulse, you're almost certainly in one of those categories. Ron Paul supporters, constitutionalists, libertarians, people who think taxes are too high, people who believe in states' rights, even environmentalists for good measure, right? Returning veterans were high on the list, pro-life activists. They've got us all in their crosshairs. This is a slide that they used to train certain of our troops at the Department of Defense based on Soviet Poverty Law Center propaganda, I mean Southern Poverty Law Center propaganda. And this is right from there. This came out in a lawsuit. Evangelical Christians, right at the top of the list of their religious extremism. Then you also have Al-Qaeda, Hamas, oh, and then Catholics, and then Orthodox Jews. Isn't that cute how they lump us all together, right? Now, supposedly they're keeping us safe from Islamic terrorists. And, you know, I'm not going to downplay the threat from radical Islam. I mean, Islamists have been chopping off heads from Christians going back, 1400 years now. North Africa was Christian once. So there is, of course, a real threat emanating from certain quarters there. Unfortunately, our so-called intelligence community has been helping them along. And we have smoking gun evidence to prove it. There was a memo that was written in 2012 by, I mentioned him earlier, Trump's first national security advisor, the Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, who was railroaded by the deep state. They threatened his son with prosecution if he wouldn't plead guilty, and that's still all ongoing. Now, this was written under his leadership at the Defense Intelligence Agency, and he tried to tell them this was a very bad idea. He actually went on international television and said, hey, I told them not to do that. They did it anyway. But they say in this memo, these are direct quotes from there, the West, the Gulf countries, by the West they mean the Obama administration, France, the UK, the Gulf countries they mean the Sunni Islamic dictatorships on the Arabian Peninsula, and then the Turkish government support the Syrian opposition. Well, we all knew that. Then they go on to say that the Salafists, the radical Muslims, this brand of Islam that comes out of Saudi Arabia, the Muslim Brotherhood, which in my opinion should be designated as a terrorist organization, and Al-Qaeda in Iraq are, and I quote, the major forces driving the insurgency. But you just said we were supporting the insurgency. I thought we were at war with Al-Qaeda. Didn't we spend $1 trillion and how many thousands of American lives because we were at war with Al-Qaeda? Oh, no, but now we're supporting them in Syria. We're supporting an insurgency that they themselves said was led by Al-Qaeda. And then it gets even juicier. Same memo, a little further down. They say that there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality. Salafism, again, is this radical Islam. Principality is a small state run by a prince or a leader in eastern Syria. And then they say this is exactly what the powers supporting the opposition want. Well, they got their wish. Here's a map of Syria. There you can see eastern Syria, and there you see where ISIS, the Islamic State or the Salafist principality, ended up. Now, our president knows this. He knew this. I'm going to show you a little clip of him during the 2016 campaign.
Our government isn't giving us good protection. Our government has unleashed ISIS. I call President Obama and Hillary Clinton the founders of ISIS. They're the founders. In fact, I think we'll give Hillary Clinton the, if you're on a sports team, most valuable player, MVP. You get the MVP award. ISIS will hand her the most valuable player award.
Anyways, it goes on, and the media said, he can't say that. What? That's the dumbest conspiracy theory I ever heard. How could he possibly say that? And then he tweeted out the document that I mentioned earlier. Okay, so then they all went silent, and we didn't hear any more about it. But it is not an exaggeration to say that the deep state in the United States, the so-called intelligence community, deliberately partnered with Al-Qaeda, deliberately helped create a Salafist principality in eastern Syria that went on to slaughter thousands of Christians. I mean, crucifixions, beheadings, kidnapping of young girls and selling them into sex slavery. This was accomplished with the help of elements, subversive elements of our own government, what we call the deep state today. They've been doing this kind of stuff for a long time, false flag attacks. I chose this one, and there's so many examples. I chose this one because it's close to home. I'm from Miami. The CIA had Operation Mongoose. The Defense Department had Operation Northwoods. They were planning a series of false flag terrorist attacks revolving around Miami to blame a foreign government as an excuse to start a war. They were going to blow up bombs. They were going to shoot down a civilian airliner. They were going to machine gun a boat full of innocent people to blame it on a foreign government so that they could start a war. Now, they never did it. John F. Kennedy said, wait a minute, that's a terrible idea. We need to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces. And you guys remember what happened. Anyways, this was all supposedly to keep us safe from communism and communists and Fidel Castro. Well, what they didn't tell you, and they should have, was that the deep state, the U.S. government, put Fidel Castro in power. There's no debate about it. There's no, absolutely no way to argue against it. Our own ambassador, Earl Smith, said, guys, what are you doing giving weapons to this Communist, Castro. Because the New York Times, actually a member of the Council on Foreign Relations there, Herbert Matthews, oh, Castro, he's a freedom fighter. He's like the George Washington of Latin America. Come on, guys. So they sent him to the State Department, and he briefed them all about what a great guy Castro was. Our government put an arms embargo. They betrayed Batista, who was a close ally of the United States. They sent weapons and support to Fidel Castro, as the Soviets were doing it as well. And then Castro got in power. Earl Smith, our ambassador, later wrote a whole book about this process. It's called The Fourth Floor, where he describes how the U.S. government put Castro into power. He testified under oath in the U.S. Senate. We, the United States, put Castro into power. But I thought they were keeping us safe from communists. Well, as we'll see, there's much more to the picture. This guy here, you guys probably recognize him, John Brennan. He was Obama's CIA director. Before Islamic terrorism, the big threat was communism, right? And this guy, he made an incredible admission in 2016 when he thought Hillary Clinton was going to be president. He told the Congressional Black Caucus, oh, don't worry about your radicalism from your past. You know, when I applied to join the CIA, when I was trying to get my security clearance, I told them I had voted for Gus Hall 2 years earlier in the presidential race. Gus Hall was the Soviet puppet in America. He was the candidate for the Communist Party USA. And so what happened when he told his CIA that he had voted for the Communist Party candidate just 2 years earlier? Well, they put him under surveillance, and then they staked out his house, and no, right? They gave him his security clearance, and he went up the ranks so quickly, he ended up running the CIA. All the while, they were supposedly keeping us safe. James Comey, FBI. You guys remember that guy? He gave an interview with New York Magazine, and he admitted that he was a former communist. Okay? He says, in college, I was left of center. By the mid-1980s, I'd moved from communist to whatever I am now, which he didn't actually specify. So we were just deep state swamp creatures, all you need, right? No more ideology. Same thing with Leon Panetta. Also ran the CIA, Department of Defense. Communist from the start. He voted to send aid to the mass-murdering Sandinistas in Nicaragua, the communist butchers who slaughtered thousands and thousands of innocent people. He voted to give most favored nation status to the Soviet Union, one of the most murderous dictatorships that's ever existed on this planet. He voted to surrender the Panama Canal that we built with our tax money to a Soviet-backed dictatorship. For nothing. Right? Why would you do that? He had very close ties to the Institute for Policy Studies, which has been a known Marxist front group for decades. Okay, and this has been going on for a long time. If we had more time, I'd give you more details, but this goes all the way back to the very beginning. Before we had a CIA, we had an Office of Strategic Services. And there were some wonderful people in the OSS, don't get me wrong, John Birch, Captain John Birch, who was a missionary, Baptist missionary to China. During World War II, he joined OSS as military intelligence to help out in the war effort. But the OSS, according to Dick Novak, he wrote a column in the Washington Post where he said the OSS had been infiltrated by communists. And this guy here, Charles Pink, he wrote a letter to the editor saying, oh, no, 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 you got it all wrong. The OSS was not infiltrated by communists. We hired them. It's still posted on the Washington Post website to this day. Now, some of the crimes of this deep state intelligence community, and the list is really long. We could spend 2 weeks on this subject alone. Torture, mass murder, gun running, drug trafficking, illegal spying, kidnapping people, regime change operations, overthrowing foreign governments. Here's some of the pictures, what they've been up to, right? I call it mass murder. They're flying all around the world. You know, we used to have this thing, the presumption of innocence, where you were innocent until proven guilty, and they had to charge you with a crime, and then they had to bring you before a court, and they had to prove to a jury that you were guilty of some crime. Or we had this thing called war, where the Congress could declare a war, and we could fight a war, and that would be that. Well, we don't do those things anymore. Now, the intelligence community just gets to slaughter whoever they like. They don't even bring criminal charges anymore. They just said, yeah, you're suspected militant, so we're going to bomb your wedding. And they fly these drones overhead, and they drop missiles on people, blow their families to little bits. Here's two of their victims. Both American citizens, both born in the United States. Their only crime was that they were related to a guy that the federal government suspected was a propagandist for a terrorist organization, very much like the ones we were aiding in Syria and Libya before that. Okay? Now, they actually brag about this. This is how bold they've gotten. This is how degenerate these people are. Now, listen to this guy. This is Michael Hayden. He was the director of the CIA, and he was the director of the National Security Agency, the people spying on your emails and your phone calls. Listen to him brag about this.
First of all, David's description of what you can do with metadata, and quoting a mutual friend, Stuart Baker, is absolutely correct. Okay, we kill people based on metadata.
We kill people based on metadata. Okay, as we'll see later when I get to the deep state behind the deep state, he's a Bilderberg attendee. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Some of you know what that means already. But he kills people based on their metadata. Some of you don't even know what metadata is. You better make sure yours doesn't look suspicious or you're in big trouble. Right? They now have vacuumed up over 80% of our phone calls. This was from a whistleblower in 2001, William Binney from the NSA. They've got almost all of our text messages, almost all of our emails. They're storing them in these massive databases in Utah. And if you think they're not spying on you, hey, they're even spying on their own people. They're spying on the top members of Congress who serve the deep state agenda. This is Dianne Feinstein, one of the most liberal members of the U.S. Senate. They were investigating the CIA's torture program, one of their committees. So the CIA hacked into their computers, deleted all the evidence, replaced it with fake evidence. And then Dianne Feinstein went on TV and said,
I have grave concerns that the CIA's search may well have violated the separation of powers principles embodied in the United States Constitution.
You think, right? Oh, goodness gracious. Now, they've been caught gun running. You guys remember Attorney General Eric Holder? They were sending thousands of firearms to Mexican drug cartels. And they were like, oh, look, so many Mexicans are dying, and it's all your fault, America. It's because of your guns, your Second Amendment, those poor Mexicans. And you know, I grew up in Mexico. They have total gun control down there. They don't actually need guns from America. But it was interesting because then they got caught. People found out that it was actually Attorney General Eric Holder and the Obama administration who were sending the guns to Mexico. And then they said, oh, well, you know, this is just a big misunderstanding. We were doing an investigation, you see. There was this guy. We were following him. And then it turned out the guy they were supposedly investigating was already on the FBI's payroll. They weren't investigating squat. They were hoping that a bunch of people would die and they could do a false flag, blame it on the Second Amendment, use that as an excuse for more gun control. In fact, that's exactly what they did. They said, look at all the Mexicans dying from American guns. We need more gun control. Obama passed some of it by executive order. They've been trafficking drugs for a very long time. And don't take my word for it. I'm going to show you a video of the head of the DEA at the time, Robert Bonner, admitting on national television he caught the CIA bringing an actual ton, of cocaine into the United States on an airplane in collaboration with the Venezuelan government.
Revealed that the government itself may have been running drugs. The head of the DEA at the time, Robert Bonner, said that a ton of pure cocaine worth hundreds of millions of dollars had been smuggled into the United States. And he blamed the CIA, saying the agency had joined the Venezuelan National Guard in drug smuggling.
Let me understand what you're saying. A ton of cocaine was smuggled into the United States of America by the Venezuelan National Guard?
Well, they...
In cooperation with the CIA?
That's exactly what appears to have happened.
Okay, what do they do with all that drug money? Well, they overthrow foreign governments. They finance fake grassroots movements in Europe to create a European Union to smash the sovereignty of nation states. There you have a picture of the Tower of Babel and the European so-called Parliament. They do all kinds of weird experiments. We found out they were doing mind control experiments. We got some of the documents, MKUltra, during the Church Committee investigations from the Senate. They were doing things that would just absolutely blow your mind. Some of them are so horrifying, I can't even talk about them. They shredded most of the documents, but what we do know, they were feeding LSD to mental patients. They were trying to shatter people's personalities so they could have multiple people inside one brain. They could train one to do something and have the other go back to normal. Absolutely sick stuff. They do all kinds of propaganda. Operation Mockingbird, back in the 1950s, they had hundreds of the top American journalists on the CIA's payroll promoting CIA propaganda to the American people. Some of the names that were involved right here, probably recognize some of them, right, on the CIA payroll. Then we had William Buckley, who was, of course, a longtime operative for the Central Intelligence Agency, a member of the Skull and Bones Society that we'll talk about later, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, promoting propaganda through his magazine, The National Review. So every good criminal investigator will tell you, you got to follow the money if you want to know who did the crime, what's really going on. So we should follow the money. Now, Carol Quigley was actually an insider with this, what we call the deep state, for decades. And he was a historian at Georgetown University. He was so important that Bill Clinton thanked him when
and
he
then, as
a got his nomination.
At Georgetown, I heard that call clarified by a professor named Carol Quigley.
So, Carol Quigley. I've got his book at home. Most of it's pretty boring, but then there's like these nuclear bombshells buried in there. Here's one of them. He writes in his book that the powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This would be controlled in a feudalist fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert at secret meetings. We'll talk about some of those secret meetings. Now, one of the families involved in this, they've been involved for a long time, it's called the Rothschild family. Your average American has never heard of them. They are incredibly powerful. I went to one of their banks. They've got lots and lots of banks around the world. I went to one of their bank websites, Rothschild & Company, and I pulled this text directly from their website. They say they've been at the center of the world's financial markets for more than 200 years. They have an unrivaled global network. They can be closer to current issues than any other global financial institution. And they're not bragging. That's the truth. It's all true, okay? In this book, The World's Banker by Niall Ferguson, he's a deep state operative, a Bilderberg attendee, big-time apologist for the Rothschilds. He says the Rothschilds had decided the outcome of the Napoleonic Wars by putting their financial weight behind Britain. So we're talking about a war between the two most powerful governments on the planet at that time. Who decided the outcome? According to Niall Ferguson, it was the Rothschild family, by deciding which side they would finance. That's a pretty powerful family. You'd think if you're learning history, you ought to learn things like that. But no, we just don't talk about them. They're still around. That's Baron Eric de Rothschild. He's one of the current leaders of the family. And I came across his name when I was exposing this lady here, Irina Bokova. She's a Bulgarian Communist Party operative. She was running the UN's education agency. They wanted her to be the UN Secretary General. And this Rothschild said, hey, she should be the Secretary General of the entire United Nations. He wrote an open letter advocating that. Now, the business community, you know, we've been taught to think of it as all these independent companies competing in a free market. Well, there's much more to the story. There was a really interesting study that came out of Switzerland in 2011. It was published in the journal PLOS1. And what they said was, even though it looks like lots of independent companies, they said the network of control goes back to a giant bow tie structure. They said that the control flows to a small, tightly knit core of financial institutions. And they describe this core as an economic super entity. They've got interlocking boards, interlocking ownership structures, so that all these things that look like independent businesses and independent major companies are actually all controlled from this tiny little core. So peer-reviewed study. This is what they illustrated it with. And that brings us back to, you know, communism versus capitalism. I really don't think you can understand the deep state until you understand that behind communism, which, of course, is just satanic, just, I mean, straight from the pit of hell. Everything God says, you just flip it upside down, that's communism for you, has been backed from the very beginning by the most powerful bankers in the Western world, by the most powerful business interests. Now, there's a really interesting book by, I think, one of the most important historians of the 20th century, maybe the most important. His name is Anthony Sutton, and he wrote a number of books. This one's incredible, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. He uses State Department documents to prove that the financing for the anti-Russian Bolshevik Revolution that enslaved that massive empire came right from Wall Street, right from the most powerful bankers on Wall Street. And yet that goes against everything we've been taught, right? The communists, they just want to rob the capital. They just want to take away all their money. Well, as we'll see, this keeps coming up over and over again. Now back to Carol Quigley. He explains that there does exist and has existed for a generation an international Anglophile network which operates to some extent in the same way the radical right believes the communists act. He says, in fact, this network, which we may identify as the Round Table Groups, has no aversion to cooperating with communists and frequently does so. Okay. And again, he agreed with this agenda. He said his chief difference of opinion was that they wanted to be secret. He thought they should be known. That's why he wrote the book. But he agrees with their overall objective, this global system. And he says that the most powerful people, this international network, cooperates with communists. And speaking of communists, I'm sure you guys have seen this lady, Patrice Cullors, one of the co-founders, one of the three co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, admitting she's a trained Marxist.
I think of a lot of things. The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists.
Trained Marxists. Here's one of the other, her and Alicia, those are two of them. Here's the third. Opal Tometi. Her parents immigrated to America from Nigeria because they knew America is amazing and Nigeria not so much. And she comes to America and then she goes down to Venezuela. That's her right there with the mass murdering, brutal dictator of Venezuela. Very close ally of the Castro regime in Cuba. And she went down there, she posted on Twitter, oh, it's so nice to be in a country with intelligent political discourse. And I mean, if you think torturing and murdering your political opponents is intelligent political discourse, yeah, it's great, right? The Venezuelan government used this as propaganda. They put it all over the place. Now, that brings us to George Soros. Again, we see super capitalists financing communists. What in the world is going on, right? Here's George Soros. In 2015, they wrote a document at their U.S. programs for their Open Society Foundation where they said they wanted to exploit this unrest that had happened in Ferguson to, quote, accelerate the dismantling of structural inequality generated and maintained by local law enforcement. We want to abolish your local police. And they wanted to, and I quote, create a national movement. Okay, they went on to say in that same document that they were going to invest, is their word, $650,000 to provide technical assistance and support for the groups at the core of the burgeoning Black Lives Matter movement. Since then, George Soros has funneled tens of millions of additional dollars into Black Lives Matter and associated terror organizations promoting Marxism. Why are super capitalists financing communism? We'll find out. So the central banks is really, you know, a lot of people look at these big Soroses and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and think, man, they must be really good businessmen. No. Right? George Soros, in fact, is interesting. He was actually convicted of insider trading. He actually got his start with Rothschild money. This all came out in an investigation in the Washington Times. Back in the late 60s and into the early 70s, the early funding for his quantum fund came from the Banque Privée, which is a private Rothschild bank based in Geneva. That money grew at a massive rate because, of course, he had inside information. They use the central banks. They control the central banks. They manipulate the markets. They know which way things are going to go up, things are going to go down. What should you buy? What should you not buy? They end up incredibly wealthy. And then they say, rich should pay more taxes. And then they funnel all their money into tax-exempt foundations so that you guys, you rich, right, working 9 to 5, making 10 bucks an hour, you get to pay the more taxes. They, of course, don't pay any more taxes. They don't pay any taxes. They own their yachts and their airplanes. Yeah, but they go on TV and they say, I don't pay any taxes. We should have higher taxes. And, of course, they'll never pay them because they put it in the tax-exempt foundations. Now, we know what the tax-exempt foundations are about. You know, Gates has got his Gates Foundation funding the Common Core, funding the vaccine stuff. Soros is funding Occupy Wall Street and all the rest. And Congress actually did an investigation of these foundations back in the 1950s, believe it or not. In 1952, they came out with this report. It was the Select Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt and Comparable Organizations. And this guy here, you see his picture, Norman Dodd. He was the chief investigator for the Select Committee. What he said was, as soon as he got this position, the head of the Ford Foundation, a guy named Mr. Geithner, called him into his office and said, hey, I want to talk to you. And this is what he said Mr. Geithner told him.
Mr. Dodd, we here operate on similar, in response to similar directives, the substance of which is that we shall use our grant-making power so to alter life in the United States that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union.
They're using their grant-making power so to alter life in the United States that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union. Now, back then, that would have been a scandal. Today, the kids would be like, what's the Soviet Union? That sounds like a good idea, because they've been dumbed down and indoctrinated. But if you read the final report that they put out, it's just incredible. They say there had already been a revolution. They said the revolution took place before and that it never could have happened had they not prepared the way using the education system. They said the foundations were supporting moral relativism, globalism, subversion. Okay, it says they've actively supported attacks on our governmental system. So if you want to know how they did this through education, we've got a book over there, Crimes of the Educators. It'll give you the whole inside scoop on how they dumbed down and indoctrinated the American people to the point where they could make this happen. Now, in this last little bit of the presentation, I want to talk about what I call the deep state behind the deep state. It's, I think, more important than everything we've gone over. You know, that's just the superficial scratching of the surface, the tip of the iceberg, the visible part of the deep state. Now I want to talk about the part that's behind the scenes. And before somebody says, Alex, that's a conspiracy theory, I want to point out, first of all, conspiracy is not what a lot of people think it is. It actually has a definition, and it just means two or more people working together for evil, immoral, or illegal intent in secret. That's what conspiracy means. People are charged with conspiracy every day in this country by the Department of Justice, by state attorneys general, by local prosecutors. It's just two or more people working in secret, and they're up to no good. Now, David Rockefeller, on page 405 of his autobiography, said, and this is a direct quote, you can go get this book at your local library, some even believe that we, his family, are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, or globalists, as we would call them today, and of conspiring, it's his word, conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. And then he says, if that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it. So technically, it's not a conspiracy anymore because he admitted it in his autobiography. Okay, so it doesn't meet the definition of conspiracy anymore, but it's interesting that that's the word he used. It's conspiring. There it is right from the book. You can, again, get this at your local library. Now, here's what they say about this.
The opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will,
yeah, we will be. Somebody knows it.
We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founder.
So there you go. There's a lot to unpack there, right? A world where the rule of law, global law, is going to use is going to govern the conduct of nations. And then we're going to use the UN's peacekeeping role, by which they mean their military forces. If you know anything about them, that ought to send a shiver down your spine. Everywhere they go, they rape women and children. They slaughter innocent civilians. They are absolute barbarians. And we're going to use these peacekeeping forces to build and implement the vision of the UN's founders. And we know who they were. On one side, you had Joseph Stalin, one of the worst mass murderers in human history. And we sent Alger Hiss. He was a very, very prominent man. He was the first Secretary General of the UN, ran the conference that created the UN Charter, took everybody down to the Bohemian Grove. Then we threw him in prison because he was working for Stalin. He was a Soviet agent. So that'll be nice. We'll replace the vision of our founders with the vision of the UN's founders. Now, this is not a Republican problem. Here you can see the Communist Party candidate for 2020.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
Yeah, you're going to create a new world order. And here is everybody's least favorite rapist.
After 1989, President Bush said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
So that's their goal, guys. They want a new world order. And we didn't need them to tell us that, right? We could have just opened up our Bible and God told us what they were up to. But it's nice to have them confirm what God has already explained to us. Now, in this book, Tragedy and Hope, Carol Quigley says that the idea that we should have political parties that are different, that oppose, that have opposed ideals, that's foolish. That's only suitable for doctrinaire academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical so that we can throw the rascals out at any election without having any extensive shifts in policy. That's how they think. And that's why it doesn't matter. Most of the time, you vote Republican, Democrat, you get the same garbage, maybe a little bit of a debate about should taxes go up 1%, down 2%. But they all keep moving us in the direction of the New World Order until President Trump came along. Okay, he kind of threw a monkey wrench in the system. Now, in the same book, Tragedy and Hope, Carol Quigley says of these roundtable groups, their headquarters in the United States, the main operation here, is the Council on Foreign Relations. So I'm going to show you a little bit about them. Founded in 1921, after our Senate said, no, we're not going to join your silly League of Nations, thank you very much, they said, oh, well, we got to get them in there somehow. So set up the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, they dominate both political parties. They have dominated every administration going back decades, doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat. Here is Hillary Clinton, back when she was Secretary of State, explaining who teaches her what she should be doing and how she should be thinking about the future.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Okay, so Hillary Clinton says the people who tell her what she should be doing as Secretary of State and how she should be thinking about the future is the Council on Foreign Relations. That's what she said. Now, this is also a Republican problem. Here is Darth Vader, a.k.a. Dick Cheney, former Vice President of the United States.
Back at the Council on Foreign Relations, as Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
They think it's so funny, right? We never tell the silly voters back home. Now, Joe Biden, Communist Party candidate, I'm going to show you a quick video of him. He is up on stage with the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass, and listen who he says he works for.
The subject, though, today is another article in the magazine. I probably should introduce myself to people, everybody. My name is Richard Haass, by the way. I work here at the Council on Foreign Relations.
And I work for Richard.
He works for Richard, right? Sleepy Joe Biden. Donald Trump does not work for Richard. Fun fact. But here are some of the people who do work for Richard. Here's some of the people who are members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Some of the people are going to be surprised by some of these names. Neil Gorsuch is no longer a member, I can proudly report. He was a term member. They have two different types of membership, term and life. Many of these are life. Ruth Ginsburg, I guess that's over now. But then you have H.R. McMaster, guy who fired earlier. I mentioned Rich Higgins. You've got multiple presidents. You've got generals. You've got Supreme Court justices. You've got heads of the Federal Reserve. You see Rupert Murdoch is on there, the guy who owns News Corporation, which does Fox News, Wall Street Journal. A lot of people are surprised by that. You've even got some supposedly Christian pastors. You've got Rick Warren on there. Interesting, right? And not all these guys are secret conspirators working to bring in a satanic global government. Many of them are just useful idiots. Many of them think it's just a nice way to network and advance your career. But many of them aren't. Now, here's the list. How many of these individuals served in senior positions in these administrations? We'll see about Trump. Unfortunately, he does have a few, and that's not good. Esper, the defense secretary, is one of them, and that's a very bad sign. I hope Trump gets rid of him soon. But you can go online. You can find their membership list. Here's some of their corporate members. You see all the mega banks, including Rothschild, including Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, on and on. You see the big media. News Corporation is a corporate member. You've got all the military industrial contractors. You've got the big oil companies. You've got the pharmaceutical companies. And we actually had a whistleblower who came out of there, a defector, if you will, from the Council on Foreign Relations, Admiral Chester Ward, who is a U.S. admiral, highest rank you can get in the Navy. And he spent 16 years as a member of the CFR, and then he realized what they were up to, and so he left, and he wrote a book about what he learned. He said that the main purpose of the CFR is the disarmament of U.S. sovereignty and our national independence and our submergence into an all-powerful one-world government. He says this lust to surrender our sovereignty is pervasive throughout most of the membership. He also said, and I think this will explain a lot about current events, in the entire CFR lexicon, there is no term of revulsion carrying a meaning so deep as America First. Okay, you wonder why they hate the president. That's a good clue. Now, in their magazines, they admit they're trying to build a world government back in 1974. They said they're going to build a house of world order, but they're going to have to do it piece by piece, eroding sovereignty piece by piece. Because imagine if they just came out and said, hey, guys, America, welcome to the new world order. Give up your guns. You're all part of the one world government. There's 350 million private firearms circulating in the United States. That probably wouldn't go over well. Now, Trilateral Commission. I mentioned Rockefeller earlier. He founded the Trilateral Commission based on a book from this guy right here, Zbigniew Brzezinski. He was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. And back in 1973, he had this book. It was called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Age. It basically says America is obsolete. Marxism is the next step forward in human evolution. And then after that, we're going to be going toward technocracy, where the scientists and the engineers and the experts will run everything, get rid of self-government and all the rest of it, and that'll be much nicer. He openly called for a new world order. He said the way to do it, just like Henry Kissinger, is to separate the world into regional governments and then merge them all into one global government. Barry Goldwater talked about them in his memoirs. Said that the Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize and control and consolidate the four centers of power: political, monetary, intellectual, and ecclesiastical. Said their goal is a one-world government where they will rule the future. Now, there's tons of these little kind of semi-secret groups. World Government Summit is one that I think is interesting because if you look at this, this is what they put up at their meeting. They meet once a year in Arabia. That is a replica of the Arch of Baal. So they had their little meeting under the Arch of Baal. If you've read your Bible, you might understand the significance of that. Now, the Bilderberg is another one of these groups. Very, very important. They seem to do like job interviews for members of the global elite. So like in 1991, this no-name governor from Arkansas goes to Bilderberg, and then boom, the next year he gets to be your president, right? Same thing with Barack Obama. In 2007, some no-name senator gets to go to Bilderberg, and then boom, next year he gets elected your president. Tony Blair, no-name member of parliament from some backwater district, nobody knows who he is, goes to Bilderberg, boom, the next year he gets to be your prime minister. Now, the BBC actually reported on this. They said that all the recent presidents of the European Commission actually attended Bilderberg meetings before they were appointed. So you get about 120 to 150 of the most powerful people in the world get together, and some of their useful idiots. And I've been to two of these meetings, by the way, never obviously as an invited guest, you guys probably figured. But I went to one in Copenhagen in Denmark and one in Virginia. And these are some of the people who go.
And they've made a lot of admissions about what they're up to. I mean, I could just give you quotes and quotes. Here's some of the members, some of the people who go. Jeff Bezos, Lindsey Graham, Bill Gates, Henry Kissinger, Bill Clinton, right? You get the picture. And they've talked pretty openly about what they're doing. They say they develop global policy there. Everybody who leaves from there gets a report. They're expected to implement those policies in whatever areas they affect. This guy, former head of NATO, says you got to implement those policies wherever you are. I interviewed this guy outside the Bilderberg meeting in Copenhagen. He was the head of the Dutch Labor Party. And officially, Bilderberg says, oh, we're all here in our private capacity. So I asked him, are you here in your private capacity? And apparently he didn't get the memo. He said, oh, no, I'm public. I'm a politician. I'm always, you know, in a public capacity. What do you mean? So anyways, I thought that was a fun fact. This guy here, he admitted in a major British newspaper that world government is their objective. Obviously, it's for your own good, right? He said, well, we just felt like we didn't want you guys to go on killing each other, so we'd just get rid of your nation states. This guy admitted they helped create the Euro and the European Union. Now, there's just a couple of these secret societies I want to mention. Skull and Bones is one of the major ones. It's at Yale University. That is actually their logo. I didn't make it up. And here's a video. This actually aired on ABC Fake News back in 2001. An interesting insight into what's going on.
And so when we heard that some enterprising characters had managed to spy on the famous Skull and Bones Society, we couldn't resist. Here's ABC's Dan Harris.
The videotape provides a grainy glimpse into what appear to be the initiation rituals of a secret society that's been around since 1832, whose members have gone on to be leaders of Wall Street and the White House, the Senate and the Supreme Court.
They're sort of trying to scare the initiates, make them disorient them, frighten them.
New York Observer investigative reporter Ron Rosenbaum accompanied a team of Yale students who shot these pictures 9 days ago. Rosenbaum's curiosity about Skull and Bones was permanently piqued when, as a classmate of George W. Bush, he lived right next to the tomb, the group's heavily fortified home. From their perch, Rosenbaum and his cohorts taped the tomb's courtyard. What they captured, they say, was initiates, known as neophytes, being forced to kiss a skull. Then members performing a mock killing.
Totally normal, right? Nothing to see here. Isn't that weird, right? I'd love to get a reasonable explanation of this from a non-Christian. What in the world is going on? Mock killings, kissing skulls, hanging out at the tomb, right? What in the world? Right? Here's one of their strategies we'll talk about in a minute is to try to control both sides of the debate. And this was in the 2004 election. Probably some of you guys remember this.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go watch.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322?
First of all, he's not the nominee. I look forward...
Are you prepared to lose?
No, I'm not going to lose.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Anyways, in the interest of time, we'll go through it. But isn't that fun? We had a choice between two members of the same weirdo secret society. And, I mean, they only have a few hundred members. Right? What are the odds of that, that we ended up with both of them running? So here's some of the people who were involved. Notice William Buckley, right? And remember what I said about trying to control both sides of the debate. So Anthony Sutton, I mentioned him earlier, the historian who wrote Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. A good friend of mine, Charlotte Iserbitt, she was Ronald Reagan's senior advisor on education policy until she figured out what was going on there and started leaking documents, and it was crazy. But her dad and her grandpa were both members of Skull and Bones. So when they passed away, she inherited all their papers and documents and notes and reports and contact lists. She gave them to Anthony Sutton. She said, here, Skull and Bones. My dad, my grandpa were members. You should check it out. I went to her house recently. She had a Skull and Bones clock there that she had inherited from her dad. Well, anyways, Anthony Sutton knew about the Skull and Bones, but he didn't think much of it. Once he got these documents, he said, oh, my goodness, this is huge. So he wrote two books, one about their role in education, which is fascinating, and one just about the group. It's called America's Secret Establishment. And what he says is that this group is a conspiracy. It's a recruiting ground for a conspiracy to create a one-world government. And he says, and this is a quote, in the dialectical process, change requires conflict, and conflict requires the clash of opposites. You can't just have a right, you must have a right and a left. So you get a John Kerry and a George Bush, and they bicker, and then no matter what happens, Skull and Bones wins. You get a William Buckley and the Washington Post and the New York Times and the public radio say, oh, this is Mr. Conservative. Whoever he says is conservative, they're conservative. Whoever he says is not conservative, well, they're fringe, extreme, wacky, kooky, you know, pick your term. And they do the same thing on the left. And so they control both sides of the debate. They get to decide where the Overton window is. And anyways, we'll leave that at Skull and Bones. Now I want to talk for a minute about Bohemian Grove. It's another one of these secretive groups. Every person at the founding conference of the United Nations was taken down to this meeting by Alger Hiss, the aforementioned communist who was working for Stalin. Now, 2,500 of the most powerful men, sorry ladies, you're not allowed. I don't know if it counts if you identify as a man, I don't know. But 2,500 of the most powerful men in the world get together in the Redwood Forest of Northern California. There is a picture of one of their little rituals. It's they stand in front of a 40-foot stone owl, and they burn what they claim is an effigy of a child. Again, if you're a non-Christian, I would love an explanation of all this that makes some sense. Exactly, right? It's a 40-foot stone owl. They're burning. And I've even got a little video. A guy I know snuck in there about 15 years ago, I believe. You can watch the whole thing on YouTube. But I'll show you just a little clip so you get a sense of what these people are up to. Anyway, and then they chant about forest spirits, and it's just so weird, right? This is what it looks like during the day. Again, their 40-foot stone owl. Super weird. Now, Richard Nixon wrote about this group in his autobiography. He said the most important speech of his political career was the one he gave at Bohemian Grove. If you remember those tapes that came out during the whole scandal, you know that's not really what he thought about them. In fact, he had some things that I can't repeat to say about it. He said it was a very LGBT type thing. I won't use the words he used. Now, here's an interview with a guy who goes there. This is the guy who snuck in and got the video, and he's talking to one of the regular attendees, one of the members. And here's what he says, David Gergen.
Grove of four presidential administrations. Okay, one last question. I read a Washington Times article many years ago where you had a comment about the organization, and then now it's been in the Wall Street Journal, it's been in a lot of different newspapers, and that's the Bohemian Grove. And back in, 1996, when you joined as a Clinton advisor, the Republicans were criticizing you, oh, what about Bohemian Grove? And then you countered them by saying, hey, I don't run around in the woods naked. What did that mean? Here is the before-mentioned Washington Times article where he said, I didn't run around naked like they do.
I don't know what quote you're referring to. I'm not aware of any quote like that. I am a happy member of the Bohemian Grove. I like the folks who come there, and it's really inappropriate for me to talk about the group beyond that. Thank you.
Have you been there for the ceremony with the cremation of care?
Frankly, I don't think that's something I need to talk to you about.
What does the Bible tell us about people who want to do all their stuff in darkness and secrecy, right? Because they have something to hide, right? That's why they're going out in the forest and nobody's allowed. Colin Powell, supposedly Republican, who's now endorsed Biden, surprise, he was a happy member of the Bohemian Grove also, and his emails got hacked. And he had sent an email to his friend up in Canada, Peter Gordon McKay, defense minister, attorney general of Canada, and he said, hey, I got to sit next to Stephen Harper. He was the prime minister of Canada. And boy, was that fun. We had some nice discussions. But Grove attendees know that Trump is a disaster. Okay, most of us are going to vote against him. So that's all I needed right there. That's the best endorsement Trump could have gotten as far as I'm concerned. Here's Newt Gingrich. And, Newt Gingrich has got his own connections to some of these organizations. But listen to what he said on Fox about why they hate Trump so much.
Now they're faced with a very real prospect of Donald Trump becoming the leader of the party, and it absolutely drives them crazy. They just cannot imagine sharing. Well, because he's an outsider. He's not them. He's not part of the club. He's uncontrollable. He hasn't been through the initiation rites. He didn't belong to the secret society. And I think that they don't see him. They have no idea how to relate to him.
So he's not part of their secret societies. He didn't go through the initiation rites. That's why they don't like him, right? Every single Republican president since the early 1920s has been at the Bohemian Grove until Trump. And they don't like him. Okay, but don't think it's just a Republican problem. Plenty of Democrats go there too. In the hacked WikiLeaks emails that we got, we found out that many of the Clinton Democrats were also involved in this kind of weird stuff. John Podesta, who was running the Clinton campaign, we found out was involved in these spirit cooking meetings. That's Marina Abramovich. She was hosting a spirit cooking at her house, and this is where they mix a whole bunch of body fluids, I won't get into details, into a big cauldron, and then they write demonic slogans and they chant and they summon demons and spirits and all this kind of stuff. And isn't that cute? That's an actual picture of her. That's one of their spirit cooking sessions. Here's another one. That's what they do when they're spirit cooking. Isn't that weird? right? Again, non-Christians, I'd love an explanation of that stuff, right? Now, a lot of this supposedly goes back to the Illuminati. Now, the Illuminati is a very nebulous group. We don't know too much about it, but we do know some. We know it was founded by Adam Weishaupt in 1776 over in Germany. He was a professor at Ingolstadt University. And the first really significant expose of this group, here's the book right here. It's called Proofs of a Conspiracy. It was written by a Scottish Freemason, John Robison. And he had traveled through the Masonic lodges of continental Europe. And what he found out was, hey, there was a secret society trying to take over Masonry. He said it was the Illuminati. He said they were responsible for the French Revolution and that they were trying to overthrow every government and every religion in all of Europe. They believed essentially what Marx believed. Get rid of private property, set up a world government, get rid of the nation state, get rid of the nuclear family, women should be held in common, and on and on. Now, George Washington knew about this. That book that I just mentioned, his friend, a pastor, gave it to him. And if you go to the National Archives, you can read George Washington's correspondence. This is what he replied to his friend. Oh, no, no, it was not my intention to doubt that the doctrine of the Illuminati and the principles of Jacobinism had not spread in the United States. On the contrary, no one is more satisfied of this fact than I am. Okay, again, principles very similar to Marx. Now, Marx is portrayed as an atheist. This pastor, Richard Wurmbrand, spent 9 years in a communist gulag in Romania, tortured ruthlessly by these barbarians. And when he finally got out, he was converting prison guards. He was praying for them and preaching the gospel to them. Finally, they kicked him out of the country. And he had this hypothesis that Marx must have actually been a Satanist. I mean, nothing could be so evil if it wasn't satanic. Well, he did the research, and he found the evidence proving his hypothesis was correct. Here's some of Marx's poetry that he published in the book. With Satan, I have struck my deal. He chalks the signs, beats time for me. I play the death march fast and free. His poetry is a dead giveaway. He hated God. He wanted to destroy the things of God. And so now we come back to Black Lives Matter. This is a... You won't see the ladies talking about it. I do have that video, but I didn't have it when I made this presentation. This is Abraham Hamilton. He's a lawyer, radio host. And he's going to show just a little clip of the Black Lives Matter co-founder talking about these spirits that she's summoning.
It's a very important practice. Hashtags are, for us, are way more than a hashtag. It is literally almost resurrecting a spirit so they can work through us to get the work that we need to get done. I started to feel... personally connected and responsible and accountable to them, both from a deeply political place, but also from a deeply spiritual place. And always, you know, in my tradition, you offer things that your loved one who passed away would want, you know, whether it's like honey.
Okay, see, if you read your Bible, communicating with spirits and dead people, that's called necromancy, that's called witchcraft. God calls it an abomination. He says those who do these things are detestable to him. It is straight from the pit of hell. In fact, this stuff that she's talking about is from the Yoruba religion called Ifa. And before the Christians arrived in what is today Nigeria and put a stop to all this, they were sacrificing humans to their ancestors. This is demonic. This is witchcraft. And isn't it interesting? That's the same lady you saw earlier admitting she was a trained Marxist. And here she is telling you they're resurrecting spirits. Now, there's a lot of these swamp creatures in the Trump administration. He's done good trying to get them out. But I interviewed Roger Stone, who was a very close Trump advisor starting back in the 1980s. He's the one who originally told Trump to run for office. And he said the deep state would stop at nothing to remove him. This was right after Trump was elected. He said, first, they're going to try to get him out with this Russia collusion hoax. They just appointed the special counsel. Then he said, if that doesn't work, they're going to try to say he's crazy and we've got to remove him under the 25th Amendment. Well, that happened shortly after this interview. And then he said, if that doesn't work, they will go all the way. They'll do what they did to John F. Kennedy. They'll shoot him. Okay. Fortunately, that hasn't happened yet. But obviously, we have a serious, serious problem. Now, as Christians, we should have already understood that this is the way the world works, even if we didn't know all the details. But so what do we do about this? Now, I've got a couple minutes left here, and I'm just going to give you my ideas. Everything I just showed you is a fact. Now, I'm just going to give you my opinion on what we do about this. First thing is we need to educate ourselves. We need to be reading our Bibles. We need to be praying. Right, the Bible tells us what's going on here, and if we haven't read our Bibles, we will be susceptible to manipulation. And then we need to stay up to date on what's going on in the world, current affairs, the news. If you don't subscribe yet to the New American Magazine, I highly recommend it. We've got some copies over there, including one on the deep state. I hope you'll get a copy and subscribe. If you're not involved with the John Birch Society, it's a group I very much recommend. It's the only group that's been fighting this battle for 60 years. No other group in America has been fighting the deep state like this. And in fact, other than the church, I don't know of any other organization more important in the battle against these evil forces. It's named after Captain John Birch, who was a Baptist missionary to China who joined military intelligence during World War II and then was murdered by Chinese communists. We consider him the first victim of communism. There's chapters in all 50 states. There's some members here. It's a great organization to fight this. Now, our children are critical, right? God has told us we should be raising our children. We should not be handing them over to the deep state and their public schools for indoctrination. So one of my talks that I've been giving here in Oklahoma is called Rescuing Our Children. I gave it earlier today. I've got it on DVD over there if you want to know what's going on in the schools. All of this stuff is going right into your children's head. They are preparing them for this agenda. So you can get that over there. We've also got a magazine, Rescuing Our Children, kind of a condensed version of it all. Now, I just want to close with a couple scriptures, because the Bible explains everything that I just explained in other terms. Now, Ephesians 6:12 tells us that what we're dealing with here is not a political issue only. It is not just an economic issue. It's not just an education issue. It's a spiritual war that God tells us all about. He says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And then he tells us how we deal with that. Ephesians 12, verses 16 and 17, take the shield of faith, so that way we can quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. Take the helmet of salvation, and then the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, right? That's our weapon. The Bible is our chief weapon in this battle. We need to be praying, right? God promises. If we pray, if we humble ourselves, if we repent, if we turn from our wicked ways, if we seek his face, he can still heal our land, right? It looks hopeless. I know. It very often, you look out at what's going on, you think, oh my God, we're doomed. But guess what? God used 300 men to smash a massive army. God used one angel to slaughter 185,000 enemy troops. He can do whatever he wants to. Okay, we don't need to even convince 51% of America that we should do the right thing. Okay, the Bible also tells us exactly what's going on and what has been going on, even back in the Old Testament. In Psalm chapter 2, verse 2, the kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers conspire together against the Lord and his anointed one. That's against Jesus Christ. And then there's some really awesome news. This always brings a huge smile to my face. Go down two verses, Psalm 2, verse 4. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord ridicules them. So they think they're all powerful and their little rituals and their demon spirits they're communicating with, and God laughs at them. Okay, so that means we can laugh too. Now, really, really good news. I've read the end of the story, guys, and we win. So that's the best news, right? And that's all I have for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. The evidence table is over there if you want more. And God bless you and God bless America. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you, Alex. God bless you. Thank you.